Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in New York City and earned a doctorate in sociology from New York University. In the 1970s, he taught school in Spanish Harlem and then became a professor at La Roche College. Since 1993, he's been the president of the Catholic League, the lay voice of the Catholic Church in America. His name, Bill Donahue, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the lay voice of the Catholic Church in America, Bill Donahue. Bill, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Sure. I was born in New York City, in Manhattan, and grew up in Long Island and in Queens. And my parents split up when I was a kid. I didn't really get a chance to know my dad. And so my grandparents, who were born in Ireland, helped raise me along with my mother. And after I finished high school, I went on to the United States Air Force, served 4 years, worked as an accountant during the Vietnam War period. And then I came back home, went to NYU, worked part-time, and then I took a position working full-time at St. Lucie's School in Spanish Harlem while I was pursuing my master's and then my doctorate. And then when I had everything done but the dissertation, I took a position when I was 29 years of age as a full-time professor at a Catholic school in Pittsburgh, La Roche College. Stayed there for 10 years, and then I went to the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. to become a resident scholar for 1 year. My first book was The Politics of the American Civil Liberties Union, and then that got me to the Heritage Foundation. And there I wrote a book on contemporary social problems, The New Freedom. I came back to La Roche for 5 years, where I wrote another book on the ACLU, Twilight of Liberty. And in 1993, 20 years ago, on July the 1st of 1993, I took over the position as the president and CEO of the Catholic League. And here I've been writing other books during that tenure and doing, well, countless numbers of TV, radio interviews and writing many, many articles. And I teach PhDs from around the world every summer at NYU. So let's face it, I've been pretty busy. But I've been doing this job for 20 years. And unfortunately, I suppose you could look at it that way. It looks like my job is secure. And I say that because anti-Catholicism, while it may not be visited upon individual Catholics the way it was at one time, most people are okay in the workplace and in school, the degree of bashing against the institutional church by the media, by government, by cartoonists, by those in Hollywood, by activist organizations, by the autistic community, in the schools and business and the workplace, it's really rather astonishing.
You're a teacher at heart.
Yes.
What did you learn from the kids when you were teaching in Spanish Harlem?
Well, it's interesting. What I learned from the kids was that you have to have high expectations of people who come from a very bad environment. And by that I mean I really have a hard problem with people who say, well, they can't learn, meaning black and Puerto Rican and other minorities who come in, who live in the ghetto. I know their neighborhood's rough. I work there. I know it's rough. But when you look at the face of these young children and you see in them potential, these are bright young kids. They have to be given an opportunity. They have to be given some discipline because they don't have it in the home. Generally, there's no father. And if you have high expectations, if you treat them the way you would a middle-class white kid and make them do the work and give them the homework and don't accept excuses, you can see them grow. And I'm very proud of my work there. They certainly had a big effect on me because I could see the love that came from these kids. They didn't see me as a white man. They saw me as a kind of a father figure for them, and as a person who reached out to them. And I took them on trips on the weekends to Yankee Stadium and to Shea Stadium, 60 at a time. I went up there and played basketball when I was a young man up in Harlem on the weekends, so I get a chance to know the people in the neighborhood. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life, and the people in Spanish Harlem have a lot to be proud of.
You mentioned earlier that 20 years ago you became president of the Catholic League. How did that come about?
Well, that's interesting. I was a professor at La Roche College, a small Catholic school in Pittsburgh. And in the early 90s, I'd come back from the Heritage Foundation. I was asked by Bishop Worrell, who's now Cardinal Worrell, the Archbishop of Washington. He was a Bishop Worrell in Pittsburgh. He's from Pittsburgh. He asked me and about, oh, I don't know, maybe 50 other people, 100, maybe 100 people, 150 people, to meet at the Duquesne Club in Pittsburgh. I didn't know what he wanted me for. I'd never met Bishop Worrell. I was surprised to be there. Next thing I know, I'm asked to be at the head table with him. I was like, what's going on? Basically, what it came down to was this. The current president of the Catholic League, which is a man by the name of John Puthenvito, had come out to Pittsburgh to form a chapter. And Bishop Worrell was interested in having me form a chapter of the Catholic League because he had seen my writings, and that I was a figure on TV in Pittsburgh and the like. And I was okay with that. But then I started looking into the Catholic League. Listeners should know that the Catholic League was founded not by me, but by a Jesuit priest, Father Virgil Bloom, in 1973, 20 years before I started. He died in 1990, and between 90 and 93, the organization almost fell apart. So when I was looking into the Catholic League, I said to Bishop Worrell, this organization is going down. There's almost nothing left to it. Instead of me forming a Pittsburgh chapter, maybe the best thing for me to do is to set up a kind of a rival of the Catholic League, because it's not going to make it, and then we'll become like the new Catholic League. He said, fine. At that point, Father Philip Eichner, who is to this day the chairman of the board, contacted me and said, I learned that you're going to start up this competitor to the Catholic League. I said, yes. He said, well, I'd like you to consider, we've just moved to New York City, and we'd like to think of you as a candidate who would like to put his hat in the ring with the other finalists. And I told him, quite frankly, I said, no, your organization is incompetent. You don't know what you're doing, and I'm not interested. He was not at all defensive. He said, you're right about your criticism, but things are changing. We moved to New York. I'm the new chairman of the board, the new board members, and we want to turn it around. So I looked into this Father Eichner, found out he was a great man, a great priest, and decided, sure, this would be an opportunity to come home. And so, yes, I came in for the interview, and of course the rest is history. But it was Bishop Worrell, now Cardinal Worrell, originally from Pittsburgh, now the Archbishop of Washington, who was the inspiration behind me coming here to be president and CEO of the Catholic League.
We're talking to Bill Donahue, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Bill Donahue, the author of five books, including Why Catholicism Matters and Secular Sabotage. Bill, talk to us about the attack on religious freedom in America today.
Well, it's coming from many different quarters. I can tell you that as recently as July the 3rd, I came to work in the morning, the day before the 4th of July, and I could not believe what I had seen. There is, as you know, a ongoing fight amongst the people who are the pro-life people and those who support abortion rights. And it's gotten very hot at the end of June, the beginning of July, in Texas. Well, on July the 2nd of this year, you had pro-life people outside the Capitol in Austin singing Amazing Grace, appropriately. Now, there were people on the other side, the pro-abortion people. They weren't just there, you know, singing a song. They were screaming at the top of their lungs, Hail Satan. Now, look, I'm not saying that most people who are supporting abortion rights are satanic. I think that would be unfair, and it would be malicious. I am saying, however, that there's more than just a few people in the pro-abortion community who are rather sick. Let me give you a quick example. There are three books out there available, the titles of which will tell you something about them. Abortion, A Positive Decision, Abortion is a Blessing, and The Sacrament of Abortion. These three books are out there. You got to wonder what possesses somebody to hail abortion as some type of sacred right. That's the intellectual basis for what went on July the 2nd and why on July the 3rd I put out a statement about this. Hail Satan is now being the rallying cry of pro-abortion fanatics. Maybe the time has come for a mass exorcism.
For many years, you believed that our number one enemy was the media. And now recently you've been saying that the most serious threat we face today is our government. Why?
Yes, there's no question about it. For my first 20 years here in the Catholic League, how many more 20 years I have, I don't know. Maybe I have another 10 anyhow. But there's no question about it. The media have been leading the way, and I'm using that in a kind of a generic form, TV and Hollywood, with their bashing of the Catholic Church, that what's been going on, and, of course, the newspapers and cartoonists. And that's bad. But what's worse, of course, is nothing has more power than the arm of government. And when government begins to encroach on religion, when it begins to break down the wall of separation of church and state, and it's not coming from the churches trying to take over the government, it's coming from the government trying to take over the churches, that's when you have a very, very serious problem. A couple of years ago in Connecticut, there were lawmakers who argued that the Catholic Church's administrative apparatus should be taken over by the lawmakers in Hartford, Connecticut, that they actually announced that the government was going to have a takeover. At that time, the bishop there, Bishop Laurie, who's now the Archbishop of Baltimore, he and the Catholic League and others were able to have a massive confrontation. He was able to bring out thousands of people into the streets, and of course we won. But it's amazing. It's never the church trying to take over a state capital. It's a state capital trying to take over the church. At the federal level, it's even more pernicious. We have the HHS, or the Health and Human Services mandate, which was supposed to go into effect on the 1st of August, has now been postponed until January the 1st. And what it basically says is this. They're defining a Catholic institution as those institutions which serve people who are other than Catholic. Well, that's one of the great things about our religion, is that we don't discriminate against people because they're not Catholic. We don't say to Jews and atheists and Protestants and Buddhists, you can't come into our hospitals or schools. Now the Obama administration is punishing us, saying, well, then you're not really Catholic, and therefore you have to go along with our insurance plans, which means that you have to cover abortion-inducing drugs, contraception, and sterilization. Too many people have been fooled into thinking that this is just about contraception. No, the reason when they put in abortion-inducing drugs or abortifacients is precisely because that's the nose of the camel in the tent. That's where they eventually want it to go. They want to force Catholic hospitals to perform abortions. So we're standing up against this, and the bishops have been leading the fight. God bless him, Archbishop of New York, Cardinal Dolan, who's the head of the USCCB, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, has been leading the fight along with Archbishop Laurie. But we have a serious fight ahead of us. The fact that the Obama administration gave a reprieve is encouraging, but not satisfactory. Basically, all Catholics want is this. We want the status quo ante. In other words, we want the conditions that prevailed before the HHS people got too busy in the lives of the Catholic community.
Some facts. Today, 1 out of 5 people in this country receive their medical care at a Catholic hospital. Today, the Catholic Church teaches 3 million students a day in its 250 colleges and universities, 1,200 Catholic high schools, 5,000 Catholic grade schools. And every day the Catholic Church feeds, clothes, shelters, and educates more people than any other organization in the world. The Catholic Church, Bill, has arguably done more good for mankind in the history of the world than any other entity. Why is there so much hatred against the Catholic Church?
Well, yes. First, let me look at that in two ways. First of all, you're absolutely right. We have over 600 hospitals, and we don't discriminate against people. That's one of our great strengths. And in fact, we also often get the rap about that we're anti-gay and the like. We are certainly not. No private institution supports AIDS patients more than the Catholic Church. We service 27% of the world's, of the whole entire world's population of AIDS patients. Now, with regard to why, what's driving the anti-Catholicism, since we do so much good, most of it comes down to sexuality. We live in a society where people want to have all the straights, want to have all the sex they want, but they don't want the consequences. They don't want the children, so therefore they're in favor of abortion. Catholic Church is in favor of pro-life. We understand that life begins at conception. That's not a religious view. That is a scientific view. Every single person who's ever born, your beginning, your DNA, was not at implantation. It was at fertilization. The Catholic view is harmonious with science. And, of course, in the gay community, people want to have all the sex they want, just like with the promiscuous straights, but they don't want the diseases that come with it. Well, it's ineluctable. It's a natural cause and effect. That's what happens when you become promiscuous. The body's not going to accept it. Nature rebels. Now, the Catholic Church is simply saying this: exercise restraint. Okay? Exercise restraint. You won't have these kinds of problems. You won't have kids dying in the womb. You won't have people walking around with diseases and dying prematurely. The Catholic Church's views, I think, liberate people. So that's why we fight so hard at the Catholic League here. It's not just because we don't like people bashing our religion. We know that the voice of the Catholic Church is the voice of sanity. It's the voice of reason.
Talk to us, if you will, about a couple of Catholic organizations that are doing great things today.
Well, I think, for example, EWTN has done great work under Mother Angelica and getting the word out through television all around the world. That has been magnificent. I think, you know, you've got St. Vincent de Paul Society and so many other organizations reaching out to the poor. One organization I'm very proud of is Project Rachel. Most people don't know this, but if a young pregnant woman is thinking about having an abortion, Project Rachel, an institutionalized program in the Catholic Church, will reach out to her and try to dissuade her. Let's just say we fail. Let's just say the 16-year-old girl goes ahead and has an abortion without her parents knowing about it. Contrary to the myth, we don't turn our back on her. We reach out to her. We bring her back. We ask her to have reconciliation with Jesus. We ask her to understand that she can't go on like this, and we provide the psychological and the physiological care that she may need. We don't throw her out. We try to counsel her. We try to have her go straight. Cardinal O'Connor, when he was the Archbishop of New York, actually went so far, and this program has been continued under Cardinals Egan and Dolan, that any girl in New York City, regardless of religion, even if you have no religion, if you're thinking about bringing your baby to term as opposed to abortion, the Catholic Church, the Archdiocese of New York, will pay for it. So I really think it's unfair that we have this rap. We're not anti-woman. The people who are anti-woman are precisely those who sponsor programs which exploit women. And nothing exploits women more than abortion.
We're talking to Bill Donahue, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and we're with the president of the Catholic League for the last 20 years, Bill Donahue. Bill, if there's a listener tonight that says, I'm not Catholic, I don't have a dog in this fight, why should I care? What do you say?
Well, I would say you should care, because if you care about Western civilization and the freedoms that we have, you have to respect the institution which originated them. And there wasn't a word for freedom in the Japanese or the Chinese language until the 19th century. There's a reason for that. They had no concept of it. You take a look at someone like Fareed Zakaria, who's not Catholic, is a CNN correspondent. He and many others have looked at the origins of freedom. It's not in Greece, where they had slavery. The origins come in Rome and then afterwards. And they're looking at the institution of the Catholic Church, which fought against the temporal powers of the state, of the royals, of the authority of their day. The Catholic Church pioneered the idea. The Catholic Church whittled away, took centuries, at the institution of slavery. The Catholic Church didn't give us the concept of natural law. That came from Aristotle. But through St. Augustine and others, they were able, and Aquinas, they were able to perfect it. The Catholic Church certainly believes very strongly in natural rights. All Americans believe in natural rights. The inalienable rights that Jefferson wrote about in the Declaration of Independence, recently celebrated on the 4th of July, That's those ideas that there are certain rights which are natural to human beings, that they do not come from government, that they come from God, from nature, and nature's God, as Jefferson aptly put it, that idea came from the Catholic Church. So if you're concerned about education, well, where are the first universities in the history of the world? They didn't come from Africa or Latin America. They didn't come from the Middle East. They didn't come from Europe. They didn't, they did come from Europe, but they came from where in Europe? They came from the Catholic Church. They didn't come from ancient Greece and ancient Rome. They gave us great scholars. They gave us Socrates and Aristotle and Cicero, but they didn't give us a single university. The Catholic Church was the first to pioneer it, and primarily it was the work of the Irish monks who preserved the great works of the ancient Greeks and Romans in their monasteries and made the first universities, such as the University of Paris. The great works of art and architecture and music, all down through the Middle Ages. That, where did that come from? That came from the Catholic Church. So if you're interested in servicing the poor, if you're interested in a healthy understanding of marriage and the family, if you're interested in prudence and fortitude and temperance and justice, the cardinal virtues, you have to look to the Catholic Church. And so I think that non-Catholics, maybe if they look at my book, Why Catholicism Matters, they might come to perhaps a different understanding as to why they should be involved too.
Once again, why Catholicism matters. And then the underscore of that is how Catholic virtues can reshape society in the 21st century. If you want to learn more, www.catholicleague.org. Bill, talk to us about the late, great John Paul II.
Wow. You know, John Paul II wasn't just a great man. He took over in 1978 at the age of 58. He was the man who was a first-class intellect, as was Benedict. Pope Francis is a very bright guy, but in terms of the intellectual prowess, really, you have to look at JP II, John Paul II, and Benedict as towers in that regard. John Paul II was an amazing man of freedom. In 1979, a year after he's made the Holy Father, he shows up in his homeland in Warsaw in Poland, and he tells the crowds, "Be not afraid." Well, there were some people who were afraid when they heard that. That was the KGB in the Soviet Union. They knew exactly what he was saying. What he was saying is that you are Catholics, you have religious rights, you cannot be afraid, do not accept communist rule. And, of course, eventually the communist rule did collapse. So no one more than Gorbachev knew better about why the Soviet Union collapsed. It collapsed on his watch. He understood the role that Margaret Thatcher played, the Iron Lady from Britain. He understood the role that Ronald Reagan played, the great American president. But he said without John Paul II, the Soviet Union would not have collapsed. And that's coming from Gorbachev, not Bill Donahue. He wrote, to me, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest exposition on liberty ever written. In 1993, Veritatis Splendor, The Splendor of Truth, the most profound statement on the link between freedom and morality ever written. It makes John Stuart Mill's essay on liberty of 1859 look small by comparison. He was a great man. He stood for freedom. He spoke up against moral relativism, as did his successor, Pope Benedict XVI, who talked, in fact, about the dictatorship of relativism.
I remember when he died, one commentator said, first he taught us how to live, and then he taught us how to die. How did he teach us to die?
Well, that's profound. I remember, Jack, you know, the day that he died. I had just come back from Notre Dame, where I was given an address, and CNN found me on the campus and MSNBC. I came back to New York. He was dying. I was scheduled to go on at 3 o'clock that day. I think it was April the 2nd, if I'm not mistaken, 2005. And as I'm waiting to go on to talk about John Paul, he was still alive at that point, they just came across with the breaking news that he had died. They rushed me into the studio. Shepard Smith was in Rome. And they said, "Bill Donahue, what's your immediate thought?" And I said, "Boy, I got to think quickly on this one." I remember what I said distinctly. I said, I'm sad that he's left us, but I'm happy that he's with the Lord. And he taught us bravery. He taught us that we have to continue to fight to our last breath. We know that the Catholic Church does not accept extraordinary means to keep people alive. That's not in God's plan either. But we have a duty to live. We that's why the Catholic Church is against direct and indirect euthanasia. We don't believe in intentionally killing people. We don't believe in suicide. That's wrong also. So I thought he showed us his courage, particularly in his final days.
What has the new Pope Francis taught us in his papacy so far?
One word, humility. There unfortunately have been too many of his predecessors, I mean in the Catholic hierarchy, I'm talking about some bishops and cardinals, who have an air of clericalism to them. Again, this is not Bill Donahue speaking, this is Pope Francis, Bergoglio. He said it, that there are too many people in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church who exhibited a sense of clericalism. By that he meant elitism. He wants us to be humble. He wants us to reach out to the people, to the common man, stop with the pomp and circumstance, start practicing the teachings of Jesus. He doesn't have any patience at all for those people, those few in the Catholic Church, in the hierarchy, or in any place in the priesthood, who might violate the teachings of Jesus. He's very clear about that. And that's why I think he's captured the world. He's not just simply a Catholic leader, he's a world leader, and the response from people who are not Catholic has been profound.
You're the lay voice of the Catholic Church in America, and earlier you mentioned Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who's the ordained voice right now of the Catholic Church in America. Tell us about Cardinal Timothy Dolan.
Oh, I just love this man. I mean, he's not only brilliant and a great man of faith, but he's courageous. He has a tremendous sense of humor. He can captivate any audience. I've been with him many, many times. Indeed, I worked with him when he was the Archbishop of Milwaukee in fighting against the Miller Brewing Company, which at that time had sponsored a vile anti-Catholic gay demonstration in San Francisco. We got them to apologize for that and not to sponsor it again. I say he's a man of courage. He's got a Ph.D. in church history. He's a person who is not going to be a bureaucrat. He's not content to just simply shuffle some papers. He has spoken out about the sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Church, which, by the way, is long over. It was 65 to 80, 85, roughly, was the timeline of this. But so what people hear about today are some of these old stories that are being trotted out. No, he's a man who's hit it off very well with the Protestant and Jewish community here in New York. He's a national leader, and I think he's. I'm just proud to be associated with him and to defend him when he's under attack.
We're talking to Bill Donahue, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Bill Donahue, who for the last 20 years has been the president of the Catholic League, and he is the lay voice of the Catholic Church in America. Bill, some people, let me correct that, many people would say you're a zealot, you're a maniac. Why do you do this?
Well, a zealot and a maniac is a person who doesn't have any brakes and shows no restraint. I don't think you could argue that's the case with me. I'll give you a perfect example. This past spring, the president of Ohio State University made a comment back in December of last year in a closed-door meeting with some athletes and coaches. He was joking around about Notre Dame, and he's talking about those damn Catholics and things of that nature, and a couple of untoward remarks toward Catholics. I was asked to go on Good Morning America to discuss this, and everybody expected me to condemn him. I did not, and I'll tell you why. A person who is an anti-Catholic bigot or an anti-Semitic bigot or a racist, whatever you want to call that person, a gay basher, that has to be a person who, first of all, as far as I'm concerned, has to have malicious intent. Secondly, I judge a bigot by somebody who repeatedly, over and over again, has made these kinds of offensive remarks. Here we have the president of Ohio State University, in a joking manner, being light, making some fun of Catholics. Look, he doesn't have a history of doing this. Was it inappropriate for a man of his stature? Certainly. And that's why he retired in the summer of 2013. But I thought, listen, if we're going to have credibility and fighting against real instances of anti-Catholicism, like people screaming Hail Satan at pro-life Catholic demonstrators in Austin, Texas, then we better make certain that we make a distinguish between those people who may make an unfortunate comment and those people who are making vile, malicious statements against our religion. So I think that a zealot may, in fact, would have said, no, let's go after the Ohio State president and let's get rid of him along with anybody else who we might feel offended by. That kind of extremism is something that you'll never hear coming from me.
If you want to learn more, www.catholicleague.org. You mentioned the word courage a couple times in previous segments. Today, our country desperately needs courageous people. How can the average man or woman in America be courageous today, Bill?
Well, first of all, they have to understand, you know, what are they here for? Are they here to win friends? Is life a popularity contest? If that's the case, then you'll never have courage. I remember a number of years ago, Cardinal O'Connor asked to see me on a Friday afternoon about something. We never got around to what he asked for. I came in, I wasn't in a very good mood, and he said, Bill, what's the matter? I said, I'm not too happy about some of our own priests. He said, sit down. Let's talk about it. What's going on? I said, how come we don't have enough priests who are standing up for the faith? They seem to be engaged in a popularity contest. And he said, yes, Bill. Unfortunately, there are too many priests who want to be liked. And I said to him, your evidence, I want to be liked too, but I want to be respected before I'm liked. And he said, well, of course, I agree with you, Bill. And that's the problem. If your goal in life is to be liked and you don't care whether people respect you, you're certainly not going to stand up for the faith. I'm certainly not saying that people should go out there and just try to create enemies. That would be foolhardy. What I'm saying is this. When your faith is under attack, you have a moral obligation to respond. And if you're going to just simply always duck and act like as if you didn't hear that offensive comment, then you are basically becoming a pinata. That's not what Jesus taught us to do.
If there's a young person tonight that says, Bill, I can't afford to say what I believe, it will hurt my career, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, what do you say to that young person?
I say to young people, you have to be prudent. I understand when you're starting out that you can't always go out on a limb. That's why I would not just simply say, go charging into battle. A person who goes charging into battle without a weapon is a person who's going to get killed and won't do anything good for any of the people that he's trying to help. I do exercise prudence, and I am telling young people to exercise prudence. On the other hand, one of the other great cardinal virtues is fortitude, which is courage. You'll have to pick your spots. And the older you get and the more senior you become in positions, the more you'll be in a position to exercise leadership. And you will be forced to draw a line in the sand at some point. So walk carefully, but don't just simply say, well, that's somebody else's business. That's why we got into this mess in the first place. There aren't enough Father Murphys left. We don't have the collar. We are freer in one sense because we are lay people, but we have a moral obligation to stand up for our faith, and don't just say that that's the duty of the priest. Lay people count, and particularly young people.
How does America get back to the Judeo-Christian principles and values as the bedrock of our country?
Well, that's a difficult one. First thing we need to do is inform ourselves and have an education. We need to know what's going on. People could just go onto the Catholic League website alone, CatholicLeague.org. You'll find out all the examples of what's going on. Sometimes people are astonished to see the attacks coming against our faith. And then again, you have to pick your spots. No one person is going to get this job done. But maybe you've got a problem going on in your local public schools. Maybe it's time you or somebody else became a school board member, or at least showed up at the meetings. You have to write a letter to the editor, the newspaper, the most read segment of any newspaper in the country. You have to become more vocal and tell your friends to become more vocal. And if you're at a party and somebody tells a really mean, vicious, anti-Catholic joke, you might turn to them and say, now, if you just substituted Catholic for Jew or Muslim or African-American or gay, would you feel comfortable making that same joke?
The name of the show is Anything Is Possible. What encouraging signs do you see out there?
Well, I see encouraging signs on the pro-life side, not so much on the marriage side, because so many young people have been brought up to believe that today's gays or yesterday's blacks. Don't tell that to most African Americans, by the way, because they are not exactly trumpeting the idea of gay rights. They take great umbrage at that comparison. But in terms of the pro-life issue, we're making tremendous progress. We have more Americans today in 2013, ever since Roe v. Wade in 1973, who have identified themselves as pro-life. Why are more Americans becoming intolerant, quite rightfully so, of abortion, and particularly abortions done casually and third trimester and second trimester abortions? I think it comes down to one word: pictures. Pictures don't lie. We have a whole generation now of young people who, because of the sonogram, can see exactly. We're not talking about a turtle or an elephant. That's not a shoe inside the woman's body. It's a human being struggling for existence. And I think I'm encouraged. I don't know exactly how the laws will go, but I'm encouraged by that. We do have an uphill battle with Hollywood. We do have an uphill battle dealing with government and getting government to back off the Catholic Church. So we have our hands full. And that's why I'm asking people, not asking people to become militant and to be in the streets every day. That's just a stupid suggestion, because no one's going to do it anyway. I am saying, if there's a few days out of every year you pledge to do more than just simply write a check, I'm talking about write a letter, maybe show up at a demonstration, get your voice heard. That's how you change the culture. When I grew up as a kid, everybody was smoking. Now, very few people are smoking. That's a good thing. How did that happen? Overnight? No. But enough people took enough pressure to say this is wrong. We have to say that there are certain immoral things coming out of Hollywood and out of government today, and we have to stand up against it.
As our time winds down, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Well, the young people have to understand that while your parents' generation has done a good job in many respects in fighting back, the fight is not over. The baton is being passed to you. It's being passed to you now. And unless you actually get out there and exercise the kind of courage that I've been speaking about, this society is going to be in trouble. There are some very bad sides. There's a kind of a moral anarchy brewing in American society. You can't sit back and say, well, I don't want to take sides. You're going to be forced to take sides. And indeed, if you sit on the sidelines like an idle bystander, as if you're just a spectator to the culture wars, you yourself at that point become part of the problem. Once you understand the pinch, that it begins to pinch you, you'll have to understand you've got to react. I hope you through prayer and contemplation, come to the right decision. The right decision is to stand up for the right to life, to natural law, and for natural rights of all Americans.
Bill Donahue, you're a modern-day John the Baptist. Please keep being courageous, and thanks. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Believe in yourself.